Good morning, Brass Tacks. You're live on air.
Hello. Good morning, sir.
Hi. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Not too bad. A couple of things here. Excuse me. Last call to Mr. Wiggins. He's concerned of his parties in power. Should be getting some of those youngsters that may have passed through the building in the place. They know all day long with nothing to do. Off of the buck. I just try to get some work for them. Or let them do something creative for themselves instead of wasting the whole life away. The other thing, Mr. Wiggins talking about impressive speaker. I wonder if you look at some of the members of the Bob Israel Party who's in Parliament or the House right now. People like Emma Isman, Mr. Humphrey, Mr. Griffiths, and John. When you talk about impressive, I wonder if he should take a closer look at some of the members of Parliament. And I would like him also to come and explain to people about this. I'll tell people about this. The last general election, there was a lot of money spending on the election campaign. And I would like him or any member of the Bob Party to come and let the people in the Bob know where this money came from. Because what I'm seeing happening now is that strange things are being occurred in Bob Is. You're the Mr. Shaw, you said?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, And as a young person, Saul. My question to you...
S-A-U-L, Saul.
Oh, Saul.
Yes, sir.
As a young attorney at law, you said you were... I would like to tell you, the way forward, in your opinion, for young people, and what areas of development you think that young people should really get into to carry sketchy forward? I come with kids in technology, engineering, that sort of thing. What do you suggest now to young people about this?
I appreciate your call, sir. My views are, I believe, twofold in this area. First of all, I believe you mentioned technology, so I'll speak broadly, I think, about entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Because within that context, we can cover several various sectors and industries and so on. I believe that where possible, we should definitely be encouraging our younger people of this generation to engage in some kind of entrepreneurial activity for two reasons. First of all, the entrepreneurial activity really helps to develop the mindset and the skill set that I think can make more productive citizens. Beyond just whether or not you have a successful business or if the business grows to be a very huge enterprise or not, the point is the task of taking on the building of a business as an endeavor. It creates or it demands rather of the individual that they learn new skills, that they develop themselves, that they acquire new information, that they grow. And that growth is something independent of a business exercise that, you know, you can't take from the individual. So that's one side of it. And the second side is this. The reality is we aren't in 40, 50 years ago. That era where, you know, we were training in school, then we come out of school and we go into a particular profession and we sit in that profession for 40 or 50 years. Unfortunately, that era is gone, right? That scheme of, or that mode rather of structuring our society, it no longer exists. And therefore, by encouraging our younger people to engage in some kind of entrepreneurial activity, to be bold enough to step out, to be courageous, to try something new, I believe that puts them in a position to grow and become more productive individuals and citizens. And also, it puts them in a position to create some economic activity for themselves, independent of a government or an employer.
That's his view. And what's yours?
No, you're perfectly right. I share the same view. But the difference is that I would have gone to say is that after we educate these people, train these people, then we could also send them overseas and see if they could work overseas. Because everybody cannot work here.
Look, you guys get involved in a lot. You want to get involved in a lot of generalized stuff. But I want to say to you that one of the things that we should really be concerned about is that analysis that has been done in the tourism sector.
Mm-hmm.
One of the criticisms coming out of it has to do with service. Now, you know, on this program, we have talked a lot about a decline in the quality of service across the board. A lot of people who live here complain about it. But this particular survey, based upon what I heard from the Minister of Tourism, is actually saying that the cruise tourism visitor is complaining about that. And therefore, we are missing the opportunity to get more money out of their hands, because to some extent, you can expect that if you feel that the service is not good, you are not going to give as much money for that service as you would ordinarily do if you thought that this service was excellent. And this is how certain of the attitudes that have crept into the Barbadian psyche and behavior are also working against our best interests. So irrespective of whether you are a young person into entrepreneurship or you got a lot of innovative ideas and stuff, this service mentality has the potential to undermine you.
But Mr. Ellis, excuse me, you could go to as much training. This also, the young attorney, a lot would tell this too. You could get the training. Let's take an example of a school teacher, primary school teacher who would have got an early study, et cetera, et cetera. Now, they had the training. They developed these skills. The problem lies, David Ellis, is how do they relate this training on to the pupils? And that is the fundamental problem that we have. I'll give you an example of what happened to me last week. I went to do some business with a friend of mine with a business place. And we were bidding on this young lady. And here she was on the phone, getting a picture transmitted to her of a friend of her who got married in London. You understand? But we said nothing about it. We just waited till she was ready. So if you have this sort of attitude, what you expect? And my last point has to do with the Minister of Tourism. I heard he said in the House a couple of weeks ago that it's around 80,000 cruise ship passengers pass through Barbados per annum. And if each of one of these tourists has spent $100, we will have what you call $80 million in foreign exchange. Now, he was the same minister that was coming in, which is the Minister of Tourism, that they're not spending. How do you get tourists to spend that extra $100 million? He's saying, suggesting places of interest, etc., etc. But I want to remind him that the rich tourists from Japan, Thai, China, they are not into shopping, no, you know. They, when they come to a country, they want to experience the culture. And they want to experience the historical events of that country. But they want something to carry back with them.
Caller, if I may, this comment you're making bears a deep correlation to what Mr. Ellis was saying earlier. And that is, what are the intangible factors that either motivate or demotivate a visitor to Barbados from spending $100 or spending $10? And I believe those intangible factors have to do with our culture, that service culture, that across Barbados we have to admit, generally speaking, is lacking. And where are we teaching it, or are we not teaching it? Where are we trying to combat it, or are we not combating it? And if we aren't, we can have a tourism product that is very attractive from an attraction perspective and from an accommodation perspective and so on. But when the visitors get here, they aren't motivated to engage in economic activity because of the way they're being treated and greeted.
There's another dimension to this discussion about the development of the tourism product. And it has to do with the fact that the government has just announced the establishment of a commission to look at issues related to tourism. Now, I have to ask this question. The former administration split the former BTA into two bodies. One of these bodies had a responsibility for dealing with product development, products, going out there into the community. The very thing that this commission is supposed to be doing, or part of it, was supposed to have been done then. My question is, are we duplicating effort here? We must first and foremost look at what was done before. You can't tell me that the government of Barbados of the day would spend all of that money and put the focus on product development under the Dems, and that there is nothing that they have done that is worthy of being kept. But we are being told you're going to set up a whole new commission without backgrounding that aspect of it. This government says it listens. And therefore, I put that on the table because it jumps out at me as a logical question to pose. Are we possibly duplicating effort? I do not have a difficulty whatsoever with the idea of trying to do something new. But please, do not waste taxpayers' money by just trying to behave as though You want to duplicate effort. I want you to convince us that that is not happening. That's my view. But my view is not the only view. Okay? Anybody else can say whatever. What are your thoughts?
I agree with you, David. I believe, of course, in an industry as important as tourism, right, is fair, we have to be looking to be progressive. The tourism product has to be continually developing. What I would like to see is not just an assessment exercise of the products we currently have and where perhaps we can make tweaks here and tweaks there, but I would like to see a more visionary exercise where we actually look at where tourism is going globally and how we're looking to position Barbados to continue to be competitive as a destination.
But there's another aspect of it. This commission is big. This is a sizable commission. And the question, there are other questions.
So we're looking at resource allocation.
Right, so the questions, are there other questions that need to be answered? I mean, what is the tenure of this commission?
Yes.
And when you say it's a commission exactly, how is it established? Those details we need to know. You already have a decision to fuse the former bodies that were established by the Democratic Labour Party and to take those in a direction where there's a greater private sector input. Now, this commission that you're establishing, on what legs will it be standing?
Yes.
Public sector? A combination of private and public sector? I mean, is it duplicating that role as well? Come on, you know, it's good enough to say, yes, we want to do something that's new and something that's different, but this one needs a bit more backgrounding.
I agree with you, David. And I think we can also benefit from perhaps getting an understanding of who constitutes that commission, and qualifications
they have
are.
They have actually announced the names of the people on the commission and their background.
Oh, okay.
But to me, it's a pretty big number, a large number of people that they have sitting on the commission. So that's why you need to make sure that a little bit more is explained about how it is going to work, and to what extent does it coincide with what the government has said about the direction of the other body, or is there potential for us to have a clash? And as I said earlier, we also need to look at the fact that we were doing some work in that very area prior to the change of government.
What are the outcomes?
And what are the outcomes and that kind of information? It was good, though, I must also say this, to have the analysis, because politics being what it is, sometimes people keep information from the public that they ought to know. We are all in this together as Barbadians. Therefore, all the relevant information on studies into the sector and that sort of thing, we ought to know so that we can make informed input into the discussion and
Absolutely.
The decisions that are being made. It doesn't make sense to hold back information of that nature from members of the public just for your narrow partisan interests.
And even so that Joan, who lives at the corner, who might be interested in starting up a business with tourism implications, might be able to be guided by what the trends are and perhaps where the country is looking to go as it relates to how she should structure and fashion her enterprise.
Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello?
You're on the
air. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Yes. I want to agree with the guy that called and said about the rebuilding of the Democratic Labour Party.
Mm. What aspect?
Yes, because I am saying that, I just want to say this, that if they had taken a note from what the former Prime Minister said, they would know that he said at one time that you can't put fresh wine in old skins. You understand?
Yeah.
So I think that they should take a leaf out of how the Barbados Labour Party move, because we have a lot of young, new people in the Barbados Labour Party that sure...
Yeah, but the Barbados Labour Party had a different scenario confronting them. They were able to bring back some of the older
yes,
politicians.
Yes, they used some of the old ones, right?
Yes, Because they,
the Dems
scenario is more challenging because many of the people with the experience have been rejected at the polls, and there seems to be a residual rejection of them right now within the wider society. It appears that way. Whereas the Barbados Labour Party people were rejected in the past, were out there, put out to pasture for a while, and now have come back with a combination of old and new. Now, bear this in mind, it may still be early days yet to write off all of the people who served in the former Democratic Labour Party administration. Politics being what it is, if you stay long enough, the people will ask for you again. as much as they reject you one time, you know, they can come back to you. But it is far more challenging for them because they don't have a seat in Parliament, you know.
But what I'm saying is that if their former leader, when he was in power, said that you can't put fresh wine in old skins, I think that they should, instead of taking somebody that was in there before, they should get a new person, a person that is new and young, and put them up there in the front.
But let me ask you this thing about new wine in old skins. When you have no new skins, you have to resort to the old skins, you know. I mean, that's being pragmatic.
I think an issue that we're not looking at here is succession, right? Now, a party that has been in existence for as long as a period of time as the Democratic Labour Party has, for it to come with a brand new slate of individuals that no one knows, with whom there is no connection, sentimental or otherwise, and then to try to inspire the residual base the Democratic Labour Party may still have to rally around those persons will be difficult without, as Mr. Ellis is saying, without at least some representation from the old guard, where those persons at least represented some of the old values and so on which the Democratic Labour Party may have been built on. You're not throwing out all the old wine altogether.
Huh?
You're not throwing out the old wine altogether.
Because he's saying, when the Prime Minister, former Prime Minister was in, he was saying that you can't put fresh wine in old skins.
Right.
So when he said that, you mean you can look at it from a wide angle.
But you're saying put a new wine skin at the front.
A fresh one. And let the old one stand in the middle.
There's somebody, you know, here is reminding, somebody is reminding you, caller, that great wine and rum come from old barrels.
Yes, but remember the word. They did not say a barrel. They said skin. So a barrel is all right, but not skin.
All right. Thank you, caller. Okay, so a final comment here from young Raphael Saul before he leaves. He just made what they describe as what, a cameo appearance.
I'm hoping, David, that on the next occasion I'll be here for the full duration of the Brass Tacks program. Certainly the opportunity to engage with the public of Barbados on issues that are of concern to us is something that I enjoy immensely. But let me just say this. I want to encourage all of our listeners out there, specifically those listeners who would be in the younger age bracket, those who are 40 years and just below where you are, David.
35
years and under. Let me just encourage you out there to be responsible for where you are and to be responsible for where you want to go, whether that is personally or professionally. We've had a number of persons around us from our generation and generations over ours who are of that ilk that would prefer to point the finger and say, well, I'm here because of this employer and I'm here because of this government. And yes, we know there are various circumstances in life with which we wrestle, but where you are now, take responsibility for that and take full responsibility for where you want to go. That is what we all need to do. Grab a hold of it, and I'm sure we'll all be able to create a more impactful and effective and impressive future.
Thank you very much, Raphael Saul.
My pleasure, David. Thank you.
One of the international stories that I've been watching with great interest has been the feud between Canada and Saudi Arabia. Now, Saudi Arabia got some gall accusing Canada of interfering in its internal affairs because Canada has said that it needs to treat certain human rights activists better than it does. Would you believe that Saudi Arabia is out there in Yemen, bombing people all over the place into smithereens? Got people living a life of real destitution and hardship. People can't get water, can't get medicine, can't get food. Because Saudi Arabia is using its air force and its troops to support Houthi rebels. And that's not interference in somebody else's internal affairs. But Canada's saying you've got to treat people better than this in Canada, in Saudi Arabia. And that constitutes reason to send out the Canadian ambassador and to sever relations in critical ways. Well, I don't understand. If there ain't double standards, I don't know what is. This is down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, welcome.
How are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
I'm pretty good, you know. Now, I want to speak to you on two matters. But first, I must say I really must agree with you. The first two or three callers who were speaking about the rebuilding of the Democratic Labour Party. And, you know, it really amazes me when I saw who they have elected now to be the president of the Democratic Labour Party. And indeed, the first vice president as well. I mean, when you look at it, how are you going to see it, or how I see it, we had some names being bandied about in the press, namely people like David Estwick, Stephen Lashley, and Verla DePisa, and I know it might be another person, who had planned to vie for the position of president of the Democratic Labour Party. And after some talk, I suspect they all withdrew and just leave Verla, which means she was she has now been elected to the post on opposed. But I'm saying that Verla DePisa, if you think about rebuilding the Democratic Labour Party, is indeed a very bad choice, and especially when you have Irene Garner as the first vice president. They were all part and parcel of the last administration that have this country at the present moment to its knees. So it's a very bad choice.
But they both supported the scathing attacks on Mia Motley as a woman, and essentially said, as far as they were concerned, there was nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, and so then there's no reason to apologize. So if you're talking, David, about rebuilding the party to build back some sort of confidence in the party, I believe that you should be looking at a young person like Guy Hewitt and the young guy Corey Worrell. They would do a better job, I believe, if you're talking about rebuilding the Democratic Labour Party. But don't tell me you're going to bring back people like Verla.
Well, you know, it's very difficult for a BLP supporter to be able to see the wisdom of anything done by the Democratic Labour Party.
But there were those parts.
No. You understand the difficulty that a strong BLP supporter will have. As a matter of fact, a strong BLP supporter has no vested interest in seeing the Democratic Labour Party do well.
Don't say that at all.
Vested interest in seeing the Democratic Labour Party do well?
The Democratic Labour Party is an institution that has done well for this country, especially under the former Prime Minister, Errol Barrow. So you can't discount a party that has done so much for Barbados.
I'm not discounting it, but I'm asking you, why would you be so keen to see them do well now?
Listen, I already said to you, they has done a good for this country. But what I'm saying to you also is that if you want a continuation of a Democratic Labour Party, who we suspect probably would have come and do just as good as the former Errol Barrow did when he was a Prime Minister of this country, you need to look at logical choices as far as people is concerned. And I'm saying to you, that Verla the Pisa and Irene Garner is two very bad choices.
Okay.
But I don't want to dwell on that. I want to deal with the former Prime Minister, Stewart, his speech yesterday. You know, and I was amazed. And I was all smiles when I heard the speech. Because, well, I mean, he said so much that I believe he should be saying before. And a part of his speech, he mentioned about people. He mentioned something about people that are trying to prosecute the party for their own personal ambitions.
Not persecute. He didn't say that.
Yeah, stop bringing that.
I don't recall. Hold on. I listened to the speech, and I didn't hear him talking about people persecuting the party.
Yes, you bring that this morning.
Well, let me make my point. I heard him speak about people who become associated with the party.
Uh-huh.
Not out of any genuine commitment to the party, but more out of what they believe they could get from it. That's what I heard him talking about, not persecuting the party.
That's why you're on your news. I want you to go back and check your news item this morning, because those are the words I heard this morning.
Yeah, I just want to correct the point, because in talking about the Saudi Arabia connection, they are fighting against the Houthis. They are not supporting the Houthis. I meant to make that point earlier. Okay, yes.
Yeah, but then he was speaking about the trials and postmortems and so on, and people who was trying to use these things for their own personal agendas.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very, you know, this come across, I'm going to be very short in this door. Well, I hear he mentioned that the first person that comes to mind was Don Valenis.
Was that?
Because I remember they pulled the plug on Don Valenis when he was supposed to address some session of the Democratic Party for the session.
Mm-hmm.
And it come across in his speech as though that was a shot that was being thrown across.
I don't think you can... I honestly do not believe that in that particular context it is fair to single out any specific individual for that observation. I don't think that there was anything... No. I didn't hear anything said by the former prime minister that would lead anyone to come to that kind of conclusion.
Well, that's what they held across to me.
You had to reach real far to be able to pin a name to that.
No, but
and I don't think that's fair.
That's what come across to me.
Yeah, because you got a particular way of thinking. Ever since you were campaigning down in that constituency.
But
you
I want to say this still before close.
You know what has happened to you.
I want to say this before close.
Let me hear you now.
I know this morning, Tony Moore from the Barbados Workers Union, Akani Madowell from the National Union of Public Workers, my good friend Adrian Donovan. I can say to you this morning that they are here in Barbados enjoying some good sunshine on their backs. I don't know if I can say anything about anybody else. Thank you, David.
Okay. Now, somebody says to me that I didn't state that the U.S. Armed Forces are providing logistical and technical support to Saudi Arabia's military campaign in Yemen. I've raised this issue only in the context of what I see as the gross hypocrisy of the Saudi position when they say that Canada is interfering in their internal affairs. But they don't see themselves as interfering in Yemen's internal affairs in a most blatant and brutal way. Down to brass tacks.
Good morning, Ms. Allen.
Yes, good morning.
Yes. Well, you corrected yourself because I just wanted to mention to you that that the Saudis are fighting against the Houthis.
Yeah, we corrected that already.
Yeah, which is bought by Iran. So as long as Iran is there, the United States will be there as well, fighting against Iran. Secondly, the DLP administration seems to continue to make blunders. And the reason why I say that is that I think it's a blunder having Bernard de Pisa there as president or chairman of the party. In addition to that, Irene Sonnenfeld Garner. And as long as and this is my opinion, as long as they have that interaction with the former prime minister, they will continue to make blunders. If you're looking at succession, if you're looking at new leadership, I would have gone strongly with Mr. George Connolly. I think that he would be in a better choice to move the party forward. Now, if you remember, during the election, he's the person who would have presented the party's position with regards to government finances, the projects that are looking to come on stream. This would have been a Facebook or TV presentation that would have been done. And based on his background in that area, he would have been a better choice. And let's look at it this way. Over the last 10 years, the administration has not had a finance manager, an economic guru who would hold that position, not only as party leader, but as finance and economic manager. And I think this is where the DLP continues to falter. And for some reason, they're like a racehorse running down a racetrack with two blinders on, only running in one direction, not looking left or right, but just straight. You cannot have or rebuild a DLP administration and do not have economic or finance managers who, whether it's public or private, to lead the country. It has been proven throughout the years that you need to have someone who have economics background as well as finance background. And I truly believe that Mr. Connolly, I think, subject correction, I think he might be the third vice president or something like that, but he should have been the person.
But let me ask you this question, because you all speak as though once somebody has been chosen to lead the Democratic Labour Party this year, it means that that person is going to be leading the party for the next 5 years. Look, in politics, a lot changes in a very relatively short period. And therefore, Ms. DePisa and the executive, as it is currently structured, they have a lot of work to do. The other critical issue in party politics that I've noticed over the years, and as it relates to the Democratic Labour Party, watch the role of general secretary of the party. Many times, the person who is really calling shots in that political party in previous years would have been the general secretary, working in close relationship to the president of the party. So this is not, to me, it isn't cast in concrete at the moment. There is ample opportunity for the Democratic Labour Party to readjust, and there is ample opportunity for one of those old stagers to come through at a later stage and topple even the existing executive that you currently see there. So don't...
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Well, if you're saying that, that means that we, the general public, can look for a lot of infighting.
I'm not describing it as infighting. What I want to suggest to you that is the natural process of change within political parties from time to time. I mean, when the Barbados Labour Party was in opposition, I remember a period when people were talking about the role of George Payne as General Secretary of the party, his relationship to Mia Motley, his relationship to Owen Arthur. I mean, and in that 10-year period, all of that discussion took place. So I don't think that you, as I tell you, politics is no Sunday school.
Well, it's not. And clearly, with those appointments, I can see a relationship between Sandiford, DePisa, and the former prime minister, right?
But you don't see gender as well?
But yes, I see that as well.
Since the prime minister is female, you're gonna match a female against a female.
I saw that, but I'm still saying that the rebuilding process, in my view, right, should come under Mr. Connolly, right? He has demonstrated during the campaign, right, his leader capabilities. He was not one of them when I heard him speak, when I had the first meeting, did not speak in that raucous, derogatory way against Ms. Motley, right? He held a middle line, and a diplomatic line, but I truly, strongly believe that he is the person to lead that party, right? And he should have been given an opportunity. I do not know the reason why she was unopposed, but it's time that men stood up and have the testicle fortitude that whether female or not, right, and having supporters, right, to make their presence known to and they said, I don't know the internal workings of the DLP. I'm just looking.
Well, this person says that they don't agree with you, that they don't see any sense in your saying that the person has to have a financial or economic background to lead the party. While that is true, that the person may not have to have it, I think the Democratic Labour Party, because of the experience that the party has had now in two elections, in the period before the demise of the Sandiford administration and in this latest phase here, I think that they need to do a lot to reassure Barbadians that they have an understanding of the economy and that they need to reach out to young blood. Even if the leader is not an economist, they really need to get some people with a strong economic background within that party so that they can bolster our confidence whenever the time comes to consider whether the Democratic Labour Party is a party that you want to go with.
I agree with you, but let's agree to disagree. The fact remains is it going to take them a long time, down a long road to rebuild Barbadian confidence in who economic advisors that they have. And
so that's why you believe that they should opt for Mr. Connolly as opposed to going and looking for new blood?
Well, Mr. Connolly is new.
Other blood. I don't know.
Yes. Because here, if you look at succession, a leader normally puts someone, or he or she might be working behind the scenes, canvassing to have the person that he wants put in place, which would have a similar characteristics to him. There's a danger in that, in this current situation, whereby we know how the majority of Barbadians feel as it relates to the former prime minister. So they will see her, right, as falling in his footsteps. And I agree with Mr. Peter Rickham that she needs to distance herself from him. But how can you distance yourself from someone if there might be the person who, behind the scenes, back you to be there? But Mr. Connolly, he stood up against Mr. Morris when he said that the DLP should have taken
I don't know that much about Mr. Connolly, except to say this. He's a new kid on the block. Versus Verla De Pisa and Irene Sandiford Garner. And you also have to take into consideration that if you're going to make that kind of impact among the rank and file or among the people who are voting for new leadership in the Democratic Labour Party, it means that you need some time to cement yourself in that party and to be able to establish linkages and, you know, to gain some support. So he would have been fighting against the background of not having had enough time to build that kind of support within the party. I mean, you're asking these people to go on a leap of faith, to jump to somebody who to them would be a greater unknown than to somebody that they know. And that's how I see that. Okay? Down to brass tacks.